Here we go, here we go, here we go. And we are live. Just give it a couple of seconds, as always. There we go. Let's just get this shared. Here we go. Bam, bam, bam. Get you tagged. There we go. We are live, guys. As always, welcome to the Accidental Journalist Live and Undrugged. We are on Series 2, Episode 16. As always, thank you to my very kind and gracious sponsor, Mr. James Jeffries, at the Gosport Bullying Campaign. I won't be able to make this without you, mate, so thank you very much for all your support, and thanks to everybody for all support. Tonight, I am with motivational speaker, mentor, campaigner, Mr. Eric Jones Jr. Thanks for coming on, Eric. It's good to have you here.
Thank you for having me on. Thank you for having me on your platform, man. Appreciate it.
Good to have you, mate. So let's go back to the start of your journey and yeah, let's find out about you.
So as you said, my name is Eric Jones Jr. I was born one out of a million people with a rare disease called club hands. So everybody has two main bones in their arm, or they have two bones. The main bone is the radius. I was born without the radius. So that made each one of my arms shorter than everybody else's. So from 6 months until I was 17 years old, I had different surgeries where they had to break my arm, move cartilage, do different things just to try to straighten my hand and give me more hand mobility. So when I was born, my mom loved me like any parent would, hug me, all that. My dad, he wasn't rocking with me. He was like, I look different than everybody else. So he didn't really want to hug me, touch me. He kind of blamed my mom for it. It was nobody's fault. God made me that way. And the doctors, I was born in the 80s. So the doctors had to go 24 hours. It took them 24 hours to figure out what my condition was because they've never seen anything like that. So, came back, told my parents what it was and kind of how life would be for me. Growing up, I remember being about three or four, and I had to go to physical therapy. And physical therapy was basically like for me, it was like school. I just thought it was fun and for school. But it was if I could go to school with the regular kids, whatever regular kids are, and go to school with special needs kids. So I grew up in the projects and I was learning how to shoot dice at the age of two. So, dice is hand mobility. And so when I went to the school, I didn't last long because I was too advanced. I already knew how to use my hands and all that different stuff. So I remember coming home and I was crying, and my grandma, like I was her favorite person in the world beside anybody. And she seen me crying because she always waited for me off the bus, and she gets on the bus. What's going on? Why is he crying? And she's like, they're like, Miss Thomas, he's too advanced. He can't come back. So it was like, okay, I can go to school with the regular kids, but now I'm about to go to school. I'm getting bullied. People are picking on me, making fun of me, saying, all kinds of crazy things. And as school went along, I hated school. I just didn't like school. The bullying part. I just didn't like school, period. So I didn't like going to school. I'm getting bullied. I tried to suffocate myself. I think I was like seven. And I was like, I didn't want to live no more. I'm like, I'm over this. And I just remember like a voice saying like, because I'm like holding my breath. And I'm and I just like let go, did that. That happened again when I was in like fifth grade. But one thing that kind of saved me through as a kid was basketball. And it was because I taught myself how to play. I love basketball from birth, but I just learned how to play. And I learned that was my safe haven. When I got on the basketball court, it was like, I'm that dude. Like, can't nobody stop me. Can't nobody beat me. I don't care what I look like to you. I'm the best player on the court. And that's just the confidence I had. And so I kind of took that into regular life, like going to school and different things of that sort. So I remember, like I said, I hated school, right? So middle school comes up. I couldn't even try out for the team because my grades were so bad. So I didn't get a chance to try out for the team until ninth grade year. I'm 4'10". I weigh less than 100 pounds in ninth grade, but I'm confident. I'm like, I know I can make this team. I've been hooping all summer. I've been working on my game. I didn't make the team, but I was a manager. And so I know you see on ESPN all the stories of people with like special needs and they get to play. That was me. I remember Coach Walker was like, Jones, you're going to get to play. I said, who, me? I get to play? So we play against this team called Valparaiso High School. I'm from Michigan City, Indiana. So, like I said, I was 4'9". Everybody on the other team was 6 foot or taller. So I'm like, it's like David versus Goliath. I'm looking at them like, okay, what am I supposed to do with these tall guys? So I just remember making three shots, getting a steal. You know, everybody was like, oh my gosh, wow. But it was for me, as I believed in myself. I knew what I could do. I didn't care who was in front of me. And that kind of helped me throughout high school, even though I didn't really succeed well in high school. I graduated with a 1.7. It was time to go to college. It's time to be an adult. My mom was like, you can stay at home or you can go to college. I'm like, well, I'm gonna go to college if anybody accepts me because I'm not staying here with your rules. I'm tired of living here, you know, 18, I'm smelling myself. So I go to college, and the first year was horrible because I picked the wrong major. I didn't even know what I wanted to go to school for. I just said computer programming. It was the wrong kind of computers. So I'm struggling and I'm like, Mom, I need to change my major. She's like, nope, this what you chose. This what you're going to stick with. You're going to, you know, stick it out. And I flunked out eventually in my sophomore year, went back home. And, you know, people with disabilities, they usually get Social Security. They said I couldn't get Social Security because I was able to work. Okay, I'm born with a disability. I can't get no work. I've got a couple little jobs here and there, but you telling me I can't get no assistance. How does that work? And it was like, it was a struggle for me as an adult. So I think I worked at like Walmart. No, I worked at Jewel's. It was a grocery store. I remember my buddies calling, hey, man, you need to come back down here for school. I'm like, all right, let me try college again. I go to college. My grade's a little bit better. I'm kind of learning life, kind of figuring myself out, networking with people, getting more confidence in myself. Again, I didn't succeed in college. My sophomore year, per se, of that year, I dropped out. I just was partying and having fun and get money and just doing all the crazy stuff that college kids did. And so life hit me again. Couldn't get no assistance. Can't get a job because people don't want to hire the guy with short arms. Like me and you could go in a job. I could be way more qualified, but they're going to hire you because you look like you're qualified. So again, like struggling to get a job. I remember I worked at Walmart and my plan was to go move to Atlanta, Georgia, me and my best friend at the time. And saving up all this money, I didn't go. I ended up moving here to Indianapolis, Indiana, where I stay now. And I stayed with my cousin. They helped me out, get on my feet. And I still couldn't get jobs, but I started getting temp jobs at warehouses. I ended up meeting my son's mother. We started dating. I got a job. This is my first full-time job, like benefits, everything, you know, like a real job. I feel like a real adult for the first time in my life. Like it's not a temp job. They can't come in tomorrow and say you're fired, you know, none of that. So life's going good. And I heard of Eric Thomas. I don't know if you ever heard of him, Eric Thomas. He's a motivational speaker. And he had a video and I'm like, he's talking to me and I'm sitting there like, okay, I need to get my stuff together. And I think I either had my son, he just was born, or he was on his way. And so I joined this community and they were like, what do you do? I'm like, you know, I'm just a regular guy. I work, blah, blah, blah. And so they noticed, you know, I had a disability. It's like, what's your story? I told them my story. It's like, you need to start being a speaker. And I'm like, what the heck is a speaker? Like, what is that? And, you know, they told me I got an opportunity to speak. Like, ET came that August. I got my first opportunity to speak in November. So I got to speak and people were coming up like, man, you're inspiration. Like, I'm like, okay, what is this? This is new to me. And so as I'm working this job, I'm going to speak. I'm getting gigs to go to schools now. I'm doing my thing. And I end up getting fired from that job because I was missing too many days going to speak. Speaking is like, I asked my mom not too long ago. I was like, Mom, what do you think I was going to be when I was a kid? She's like, I don't know. Something with talking because you would never shut up. And I was like, okay, this makes sense now. So I get fired and a lady at my church is like, hey, you want a job at the school? Okay, what's this? I'm going to speak to kids. She's like, no, it's special needs kids. It's like kids with autism and different stuff. I'm like, okay, that's cool. I get in there, it's a whole different ball game. Like, I had to learn patience, all this stuff, but I learned to love these kids, even though like people treat me normal. I'm not, my condition isn't as worse as theirs because theirs is more mental. Like, those kids like mean a lot to me. So I work in the school, you know, I'm going to speak. I'm a co-author in a book, start mentoring. I can still play basketball. I'm just not in the condition to play every day. So I coach now. And now I'm a teacher. I'm a kindergarten teacher. And that's kind of like my story. I started off with it looking like, what the heck am I going to do? Like, because sometimes with people with disabilities, we can give up and somebody can help us throughout life. And mama, and shout out to my mom, because she never allowed me to, my situation, to determine who I was. She was like, she always said, you gotta try. Like, don't just because you have a disability or something's wrong, don't use that to your advantage. Like, at least try. And so I always bet on myself. And that's how I got from point A to point B, is like betting on myself. With that, you have to believe in your own abilities. You got to have heart effort, not just regular effort, because like I said, I was 4'10 and under 100 pounds playing with 6 foot guys. Right now I'm 5'7 and 130 pounds, and I can go on a basketball court and play against the best of them just because I have heart. I don't go to the gym. I don't lift weights. I'm not, you know, no physical guy, but my heart strength is stronger than some people's physical strength. And then you got to trust the process. Like I said, I had over 16 different surgeries from 6 months all the way until I was 17 years old. Each surgery, I had to trust that they were going to get it right, because they could, you know, one little move, oh, my hand's gone, or my hand stuck the way that it was. So that's just who I am. Eric Jones Jr., the underdog with the heroic heart. And you got to bet on yourself. When you bet on yourself, others will bet on you. And then that's how you get to to being who you are and living out your purpose.
Hmm. Yeah, I identify with you there. You know, I'm disabled. I've got certain disabilities. I was brought up in the special school system in the UK because I have what's called a divergent mind. Basically, it was dyslexia and ADD, ADHD, but this was in the 80s, so they didn't really know what it was. So I couldn't fit in anywhere. I struggled with that. But my journey took me to lots of different trauma. You know, by the sounds of it, you know, you got it. Once you got locked onto that that motivation, you were locked onto that motivation. It took me nearly 30 years to get back on track. You know, I learned to read and write as an adult. I have MS, I have paresthesia, you know, and other things. And you're right, you have to have a certain heart. I think you have to have a service heart. I have a service heart. I like to serve my family. I like to serve my community. You said about church. I like to serve my church. My faith is a massive thing in my life. you know, because God saved my life. You know, when I was his enemy, he was like, okay, I want you. So, yeah, I mean, I kind of pushed through that and got that service. I love to serve at my church. And I think when you've been, when you've lived a certain way, when you've experienced certain things, I think it is our duty to educate. I think that, you know, if you can teach, teach. If you can't teach, teach. Because we all need teachers. We all need father figures. We all need brother figures. We all need that guide. And many people who have that, you know, who go through the mill like you have, many people never find that. You know, many people are still stuck in that. There's, you know, three parts to mentality. You've got victim mentality, survivor mentality, and thriver mentality. Most people, you know, can get stuck in that, never get past that victim mentality. And then, you know, if you're lucky, you go from the victim to survivor. And a lot of people just get stuck in that and become survivors. But that's no way to live. You know, the way that God wants you to be, the way that we should be, is connected. You know, trauma and addiction, whether it's trauma, whether it's addiction, whether it's, you know, it's all breakage in connection. And when we make that step into, from survivor to thriver, that's when we make that step into reconnection. And that's what this is. It's reconnecting those, you know, those things that we were disconnected from life, from God, from family, from purpose. You know, many people never find their purpose. Like I say, it took me over 30 years to find mine. You know, yeah, I guess, you know, I'll tip my hat to you. It's not an easy thing. When did you make that transition from sort of head purpose to heart purpose, and how did you go about doing that?
So like you said, it took me 30, I was like 30. So this, like, the transformation has been like the last 6 years. So, really, so what happened was I was my 30th birthday, right? And I went to Atlanta, Georgia, and, you know, partying, having fun. I missed my flight. I was too drunk. I missed my flight, but it was a reason. My buddy that I was with, he was an entrepreneur. So, like, you know, we have fun the next day. And then that Monday, because I couldn't leave till Tuesday, he was like, all right, fun's over. Let's get to business. And so he takes me everywhere he's going. He has a clothing line at the time. And I'm like, man, this is, like, it's not easy, but I was like, this is doable. I like this. And so I went back home with the entrepreneurial mind. But then that's when I got into speaking. I was like, and it's funny because I have a clothing line now. It's not as big as I want it to be. I just started. But, you know, that's kind of how I started with it, from that being at 30. So when I started motivating and going to the schools and going to the detention centers and kids, like, seeing me out in public, like, hey, man, I remember you, or you remember talking to me and this. And I was like, okay, this is what this is why I was born this way. Like, a lot of people couldn't step in my shoes and be the way, like, be born the way I am. Like, I always tell people I'm the top five shooting 3-point shooter alive, because they don't understand how hard it is to shoot the basketball, even though it looks easy because I've been doing it for so long. So it was just seeing people actually get inspired and motivated from my story. And then just the love of, like you said, serving. I love helping kids. I've been that way since a kid. Like, I would help other kids. I remember stuff now as an adult, how I would help other kids in whatever way I could. But I've always been a helpful person. And so once I seen that, it was like, okay. And I've been doing it for free for a while, but now it's like, okay, now it's time to monetize my story, like turn my pain into purpose and actually help people and be able to help people all around the world and, you know, go speak across the country and just do different stuff. And I think it's the legacy of having my son. Like, I had my biological dad died when I was 4, and I have a dad, and he's my sister's dad, but he's been my dad since I've been 5. But our relationship wasn't the best. But just me having my son, and I have a stepdaughter too. But just having kids is like, okay, I got to do something better than, I got to be better than my parents. And I got to be the best version of myself. So the best version of myself is speaking, is helping people, adding value to other people's lives. And that gets me, that brings me joy. Like, I never think that, like, helping people and doing a podcast and just learning different people and connecting with people, like you said, like, we live on two different parts of the country. So just connecting with people, that brings me joy. And when I changed was that video, I listened to Eric Thomas, and, you know, life's hit me. I've been married and got divorced and, you know, done some stuff I shouldn't have done throughout the last few years, but I'm human and I'm learning to be the best version of myself. And never would have thought in a million years I'd be teaching. And I'm learning from teaching is helping me with speaking, because you, like you said, you got to teach. When you're speaking to people, you're teaching. You're not just going up there, hey, I got a cool story. You got to tell them how you overcame each, you know, each step. So that just gets me, you know, gets me on a high. Like, I love going into schools. I love talking to kids. I love inspiring people. So it changed that day that I heard that video. And I've just been getting better ever since, and trying to be the best version of myself for myself and for my kids.
Mm. Identity is one thing that I, you know, over this past 8 years, I suppose, that I've been looking at, because I never really knew who I was. You know, I became disconnected from myself, from my family and from my God when I was 8 years old. When I was sat on my mum's knee and she told me that I was, you know, she loved me very much, but I was adopted. Now, for a lot of kids and for a lot of people, you did get that feeling of, well, I'm loved by someone. Well, I got that feeling of, you know, I'm not loved. I've been, you know, my real mum didn't love me.
Yeah.
So at 8 years old, I disassociated from my own identity, and I spent years and years becoming lots of different things. You know, I was a violent man. I was a criminal. I was a bare knuckle fighter. I lied my way through life. I, you know, in and out of relationships, trying to be this, trying to be that. And never really knowing who I was. You know, I got married at 29, and my daughter at 30, and she was my life. She still is my life. She's 15 now, and I struggled with that, because, you know, I was dad, and, you know, and I was husband, and I was brother, and I was this, that, and the other. But I still didn't know who I was, because many, many years I spent just doing whatever I could just to get away from my own head. So that was a difficult thing for me. So, you know, in this past 8 years, since I've been sober, and I've been an active part of the church, and I've been part, you know, done the Alpha course 22 times, and, you know, being an assistant leader on that, and now helping out at the school for our church, called the School of Supernatural Life, which is basically teaching you how that God is a, you know, naturally supernatural and supernaturally natural being. and how we live our lives like that. And a big part of that course is who we are in God, is who we are in ourselves. And I didn't know that. So I spent many, many years trying to be this, be that, be whatever. You know, I met my now wife when I was a homeless junkie. You know, and she worked at a food bank. So, you know, I tried to be what I pretended, and I tried to be what I wanted to be. But what I am, what I know I am, I call it a hooligan, because, you know, I went from violence to vision, because, you know, the Bible tells us, and God tells us, that we are not just sons and daughters of God. We are the prince, you know, we are the princes and princesses of heaven, and that is our rightful place. And we take on that identity. And when we do that, when we take on that identity, God gives us purpose. You spoke about purpose. And I had people coming up to me, giving me prophecy, saying, oh, God's going to lead you this, God's going to lead you that. I didn't want to be a journalist. I wanted to be an actor. I tried to become an actor, you know, and it led me down a really dark, difficult path, and it nearly killed me. But then when I got sober, and then when I found my purpose in God, and when I decided that, you know, I was going to become an educator, God gave me a chance to do that. And he gave me a chance to work in British Film. You know, I got asked to go and work on a film called The Souvenir, part one and part two, which was funded by Martin Scorsese. And I got to speak about my life, and I got to work with the actors, and I got to work with the director, and that led me into other avenues. But I never, you know, I'm called the accidental journalist because I accidentally became a journalist, because people were telling me I was going to change the way that people view Christianity. And Christian entertainment. And then the pandemic hit over here, and we got locked down twice. You know, in the first lockdown, I really, really, really struggled with my mental health. I'm not one that can be locked up. You know, I'd done prison, and I didn't like that, because I get way too claustrophobic. So I decided to start doing this, and to help build my confidence. And then God then gave me a purpose, because I know that we suffer from the disease of disconnection, addiction, trauma, disability, these things that we grow up with that we think are a normality, and it's not. And, you know, I never thought that I'd be doing this. I struggle to speak on the best of times. So, you know, he told me I was going to connect people, and that's what I do. And this is why I get people like you to share your stories, to share your purpose, because from pain comes purpose. But people don't realize that. People get stuck in that, well, I'm in pain right now and I don't know what to do, and then they get stuck on the, you know, whether it's self-medication or, you know, self-deprivation, whatever, and you get stuck in that rut, you get stuck in that cycle, and you get stuck in the you know, survivorship. And it's healthy to start with, but it's not healthy to be like that. So when we do this, and we're talking about thriving, and we're talking about changing lives, we do it because, not because we, well, I really do enjoy doing this, and you know, I really do enjoy listening to other people, and I enjoy trying to help people. But I don't do this for people to feel comfortable, because the truth often hurts. And the truth is that there are things out there, there are people like us that have been stuck just outside of the periphery, that people have ignored for years. You know, people with disabilities, but real stories, people that have gone through real trials and tribulations, and they don't know what to do, and they don't know how to stand up and be counted. And that's what you're doing, and that's why I stand here, well, sit here, and I offer my platform, and I offer my voice, and my ears to people that really, really want to get their point across, to get their story across, to give their testimony. Because how do we change the world if we don't talk about it? How do we get people to listen if we don't take them out of the comfort zone? I'm sure you found that when you've been in your, you know, when you've done your talks. You know, I'm on a walking stick. I get stared at. You know, I get self-conscious at times. I get a bit wobbly. I can only imagine, you know, I've got a scar on my hand that I hide. I've got scars on my body that I hide. I can only imagine you having what you have. You get looked at, and you've had probably had some crap over the years. And it's not comfortable for people to look at. And here you are saying, look, and that has to be applauded.
Appreciate it.
You know,
it definitely is, like you said, public speaking is one of the hardest things to do, just in general. And for me, so I found out as an adult, it started with my dad. He used to put a jacket on, like in the summertime, or we go out, he put a jacket on me so people wouldn't stare. And as I became an adult, I started to do that. And so when I would go speak, I use that to my advantage. You know, I have my jacket so people couldn't really tell. And right before I get on, right before I speak, I take my jacket off. Now I'm here. Is, you know, you didn't sit and talk to me because you didn't notice my arms were short. And now it's like, oh, I'm the same person with the jacket on, with the jacket off. And it's just like, I'm at an advantage with looking the way I look, because now people are looking at me. I have their attention off of my appearance. Now I can give them my message. But it definitely, you definitely have to build that confidence. And I think being a teacher helps, because I'm in front of kids every day. You know, kids, why are you born that way? Why do you look like that? You asked me that question yesterday. I gave you the answer yesterday. It's the same thing. I'm not going to change. You're going to see me at the end of the year, and guess what? I'm going to look the same. And after they realize that, it's like, okay. And then it's like, it's crazy, because strangers accept me almost more than people that know me. And so when I get that feeling, it kind of helps with my confidence. And the funny thing, you said you're an accidental journalist. I was sitting there thinking, I'm an accidental teacher, because I just got the job just to get a job. And now from my journey, I'm, you know, there. So sometimes you never know what your purpose is or what God has in store for you. So you got to trust the process. Like, you had to trust the process. You wanted to be an actor. I didn't even know what I wanted to be. I just wanted to make money. And, you know, that's all I knew. But now that we both have a purpose, it's to tell our stories. It's to share, you know, that we're human, and then that we overcame human obstacles and adversity. So I definitely had to build that confidence up. It wasn't something that, like, my first couple times speaking, my heart was doo-doom, 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 doo-doom. But when I got up there, I know how to talk, and that kind of helps me. So it took time to build that confidence, though. So it definitely was a challenge. And to, like, what you were saying, you just got to keep going. Like, you can't kind of, like, give up. You said you met your wife when you were homeless. Like, you never know when you're going to meet somebody you need. It's not about meeting somebody you want. It's about meeting people that you need, and you never know what that person looks like. You never know. It could be a teacher. It could be somebody from the church. It could be a person off the street. But you always going to need somebody to help you get to that next level. And don't be scared if it's somebody that has short arms or if it's somebody that looks a certain way, because you never know who, you know, never know who it's going to be. So I like when you said that, because you never know where the help's going to come from. And you never know what situation you're going to be in when that help comes. Because sometimes, especially as men, we're very prideful and somebody wants to help us. And we're like, nah, I don't want the help. And we miss our blessing. So don't miss your blessing because you want to have an ego or you want to have pride, because we all need some help to get us to the next level.
Yeah. You know, I haven't always accepted my blessings gracefully. It's not always been easy for me to admit when I'm wrong. It's not always been easy for me to admit when I've done wrong. And it's not always easy for me to take a compliment, because for so many years I was the king of deprivation, and I would, you know, punish myself, and we punish ourselves. So, you know, I get compliments now. I'm getting better at taking them. I'm getting better at taking blessings. I like to give blessings, you know, whether it be out in the community or whether it be in church. I'm a very lucky man that, you know, all throughout my recovery, that my church has been a massive help to me and my family. You know, they've brought food to our door. They've cooked it and brought it to our door. They paid for our wedding. You know, they put on our wedding reception. They, you know, they've been there for me when I've been also broken. And there have been times in my recovery where I've been a very, very broken man because things that have happened. And that's important. You know, it's important to surround yourself, no matter what your purpose is, it's important to surround yourself around father figures and, you know, mentors and people within the church and people within the community. And it's important for you to be part of that as well. It's been important for me in my growth and finding out who I really am. Because I quite like me now, and I never did. That was a difficult learning to love myself. Forgiveness. You know, that's a massive one on me. Forgiving other people. Forgiving myself for the life that I've, for the roads that I've taken myself down, and the guilt and shame that I carried, you know, in 2017, my 2-day-old niece was murdered by her father. And 9 months later in prison, he was murdered by his cellmate. And as a family, we were left without answers. I was left without answers. It took a year, almost a year, to have the funeral. And at the funeral, his mum, after the funeral, put her arms around me. She hugged me. And that kind of broke me, and that reset me, because I knew then I had to forgive. Because forgive doesn't mean forget. Forgive does not mean suddenly like. You know, I knew I had to love them in a biblical way. You know, I'm commanded to love. Love does not mean like, you know, all the time. And what I needed to do was forgive myself. Forgive them enough to get them out of my mind. Not let them take up that space. because mental illness has been a real bane of my life. So not let them take that space and not let them live in my head rent-free. Sometimes that's what forgiveness means. And that's what I did. And that's how I'm able to live better on a daily basis. Because if we don't forgive ourselves for the things that we've done, if we live in that guilt and shame, that all that is doing is like drinking poison and expecting another person to die. Ain't going to happen. So, you know, blessings are important. And I'm blessed every day at being able to speak to people like you. I'm blessed with the family that I have. I'm blessed with having a daughter. We had Father's Day here in England yesterday. And I was blessed to be able to have that. But I'm also blessed to be able to serve in the community and serve in the church. In a pretty high capacity. I'm blessed by being able to just get up on a morning. I'm thankful for that because that wasn't always possible. But mostly I'm blessed by other people's stories. That's food to me. Man can't live on bread alone. You know, I was a very one-dimensional person. And the thing about getting clean is you get your emotions back, but that's also it's the best thing, but it's the worst thing. So I'm still learning to deal with these things. You know, I often babble on and I speak to guests and I cry all the time because I get overwhelmed. This is a blessing to be able to cry in front of other people. I've spoken to terrorists and bank robbers and people in, who've lost people to murder, people that have got stories like yourself that have come up through the, from despair to fighting out. That's a blessing. You're blessing me by being here, but, you know, you're blessing all so many people and you're blessing yourself because, you know, that's what we're here to do. We're here to give out the blessings. And if we're lucky, you know, we receive them back. Family's a big one for me. My children, my wife, my children, and spending time with them, even though they drive me crazy at times. But, tell me about your family.
I have a son, he's 8. He's a mini-me. Like, he looks like me, he acts like me, he's like similar stuff. The crazy thing is he's albino, so he was born different too. So he's like light skin, red hair. He looks different. My daughter, she's 16, going on 17 in August. She's a senior. She's about to be a senior in high school. She's the captain of her dance team. So she works, you know, she's a typical teenager. Usually when she texts me, it's, can you send me some money through Cash App? My son, he comes over because he's, you know, biologically mine. He comes over. He's with me a lot. He's with my mom right now, but he'll be with me for the rest of the summer. I got my mom, my sister, and my dad. I'm still cool with their mom, the kid's mom. Like, you know, I would look out for her. I have a brother. But then I have friends, but my close friends are my family. So I got nephews, you know, through them. But I would say I'm big on family now that I have a family, but I wasn't. Because my biological dad's family, like, I've never seen a lot of those people. My dad died when I was 4. And I feel like I was a kid. Why did I have to reach out? Who do I even know how to reach out to them? So family wasn't big on it until I got my own family. And now it's the dopest thing ever to be a dad. Like, even though my son, you know, like you said, he can get on your nerves, but that's the dopest thing, like, to take him to the basketball court and play basketball with him. I never had that. Nobody took me to the basketball court. I went by myself with my friends, but just to go and me and him two-on-two playing against each other, playing against some other people, like, I can see us, like, okay, we're going to be dominating on courts, me and my son. So, and then I have a clothing line. I named it after my son because I wanted to give him some type of ownership and a legacy. If something ever happened to me, his name is LLC. He could change it to whatever he wants. So for me not to kind of have an active father and to be an active father is, it's just dope because I don't try to do it and do things just to, because I didn't have a dad. I do it because he likes to do it. Like the other day, he don't watch TV, he watches YouTube, right? So he's watching his dad and his son, they're flipping bottles. They're flipping the water bottles. And I'm like, man, I could do that. He was like, no, you can't. I'm like, all right, let's go outside and check it out. So we did it. And I think he beat me, but just a smile on his face that I sat there and watched the video and then we went outside and did it was like the best thing to me. So like you said, Father's Day was yesterday. Even though he wasn't here, he's out of town. It's still dope to be a dad. So that's kind of like my family. I eventually want to be married again. I kind of thought I wanted a daughter, like a newborn, but then you think about changing diapers and little girls like to talk a lot. So I don't know. If it happens, it happens. But if not, I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I mean, I have one biological daughter, but, my first marriage, I had three stepkids, two girls and a boy, and then in my now marriage I have two girls and two boys. The eldest, I've taken care of him since he was eight, the eldest. Our 8 year old, I took him on when he was 3 months old. So we've kind of grown together, I guess. I guess the hardest thing for me is to admit that, I always thought, as broken as I was, that I was a good father. But actually looking at it and the things that I did and the situations that I was in, and some things that my daughter saw, I wasn't a good dad. I wasn't a good person. So that's hard to admit. But, I have a relationship. I have that connection with my daughter. We're very, very close. I have a relationship with the other kids, and I guess me and the little boy, we kind of clash because he reminds me so much of me when I was his age. And he's eight, and that's when my problem started, and he whines me to the point where I just want to scream and shout. I guess I could deal with it better, but, God's blessed me with this family, and life doesn't always feel like a blessing, but we have to remember it is. 8 years ago, I died. Eight years ago, March, I was, 7 years ago, I was in hospital and I died, and albeit for just over 4 minutes, but that I then had a mental breakdown, a spiritual breakdown, a physical breakdown in hospital. And I became convinced that I'd caused the end of the world and that I was being judged by everybody that I'd ever hurt. So that was a really, really hard time. And I pushed a lot of people away. And I had brain damage, but through hypoxia, but that is also when I met Jesus at the end of my bed. You know, and being a Christian, I've people have accused me of, when I became a Christian, taking the easy way out. Being a Christian ain't easy. It's the opposite, it can be really, really hard doing the right thing. I have a criminal mind at times, we're not perfect, are we? We're not here to be perfect. We weren't created to be perfect, and I guess it was in that time that I realized that church wasn't a museum for good people. It wasn't a gallery for good people. It was a hospital for broken people. And, I could admit that I was broken among other broken people. And that's when I found salvation. And that for me is the be all and end all. Without God, there would be nothing for me. Absolutely nothing. There'd be none of this. There'd be, I've had to make some really difficult decisions about, the people that I hung about with when I became a Christian. My dad used to have a saying, and he used to say, you shovel shit long enough, you start smelling like it. So you hang about with those people, you start acting like them, and you start being like them and living like them and smelling like them. And so I had to walk away from that, from everything that I knew. And I guess we have to do that at times because it's bad for us. It is really bad for us. But, I still make mistakes, and people still go, oh, you're a Christian and you've done this and you said this and you swore and salvation isn't a complete soul change, is it? It just means that we're forgiven for what we've done. And I think we all need to know that, especially me. And, so many blessings and so much power from God that it means that my life is so much different now, that I get to, I get the blessings every time. I kind of feel selfish doing this. I know I talk a lot. I do apologize, but I do. I find I get the blessings from this, listening to your story and other people's stories. And I kind of feel selfish because, I kind of feel that it's take. But, all I ever wanted to do with this was give other people a chance to find their voice, because I know what it's like not to have one. And you know what it's like not to have one. And we have to fight to find our voices. And we don't always do it in the right way. And we don't always say the right thing. We don't always know what to say. But it's a gift. It is a gift. Redemption is a gift. And with that comes this. And I find myself really, really, happy that I got to speak to you. Is there anything that you'd like to say to people out there?
Before I do, I wanted to piggyback off what you said. Like when people, like you're trying to do right thing and you make a mistake or something, we're not here for people to judge you. God's the only person that judge you. So like you said, nobody's perfect. Just be yourself. And whatever happens, happens. It's not for you to go to the church and for people to like you, because for me, church was always different. And once I realized, like, my relationship with God is personal, it has nothing to do with anybody else. I could care less of what other people think or say about me, because I'm a teacher. I have a podcast. I cuss a little bit. I like to do fun stuff. Like, you know, I'm a normal person, but my purpose is to go and help children. So, you know, just be yourself and everything else will work out. But what I want to say to people, no matter what you're going through, it might be a small obstacle, a big obstacle, don't give up on yourself. And don't be so hard on yourself, because you've got through something before. Like, the way I get through stuff now is because I got through being born with short arms and overcoming the bullies and overcoming the surgeries and overcoming all those different things. So you've already won in your life. You're an underdog. Everybody's an underdog, but you're a successful underdog. And don't look at your right now. Look at when you won before. What were you doing when you won before? And you'll win now. So don't look at the situation and be like, oh, it's the end of the world. It's not the end of the world. It's not over until the fat lady sings. And if you still got opportunity to move, breathe, walk, talk, or whatever you can, get past that situation. Like I think we both said, get around people that can help you. Stop getting around. When you're around people that, nine people that are broke, you're going to be the 10th broke person. Get around winners and you'll start winning. It's very simple. I don't know if you watch basketball, but the Golden State Warriors just won. People talked about KD when he went there. They talked about Wiggins. Now, look, they both champions because they went to the winning team. They went to a winning culture. Get around winners and you'll win. Because when you're around people like us that went through a lot of hard times in life, and now it looks like we're winning. We weren't winning from the get-go. It's hard as life is hard as heck. You're going to get punched in the face 10 times, get up 11. Like, just don't give up, because there's somebody watching you. It might be your kid. It might be your mom. It might be your wife, your husband. It might be your brother, your sister. Somebody's watching you. And if you give up, they're going to give up. So don't give up because somebody's watching you. And my slogan, you can measure my arms, but you can't measure my heart.
I like that. I like that a lot. I like that a lot. So do you have any resources that that my followers can look at? Do you have a website? Do you have any books? Or
You can go to, well, I'm really on Instagram, Eric Jones Jr. Speaks. The Underdog Podcast. Underdog is spelled UNDERDAWG Podcast. That's on Facebook and Instagram. My clothing line is Christian Dewan, and Dewan is spelled DEJUAN.com. You can go to any platform for podcasts and just look up Underdog Talk. On LinkedIn, I'm Eric Jones. If you put in Eric Jones Jr. Speaks, I'll pop up on there. But those are ways you can reach out to me, or ericjonesjr@gmail.com if you want to email.
Cool. If you get all them sent to me in a private message, I'll put all them on.
Got you.
On here. And as I said, this will be replayed on YouTube in the next day or two, and whatever your audio podcast flavor. Through Anchor and Spotify. I want to thank you for coming on, mate. And thank you for sharing your wisdom. If you just wait there a minute, I'm just going to sign off and we'll just have a quick chat. Thank you, guys. Thank you, guys, as always, for tuning in. And I shall see you again next Monday. Cheers, guys. Take care.